This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Welcome to Campus Voices, where each week we look at some key issues that affect UK students, the UK campus, and the Lexington community. Campus Voices is created by Journalism 304 students with the help of the journalism faculty. Please send any questions to news@wrfl.fm.
Welcome to Campus Voices. I'm your host, Maggie Davis. Today, we will be discussing the results from last night's election and the impacts from both the national and local races. But first, we're going to start with some breaking news. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has resigned. WRFL's Desiree Cross has more on the story.
The country's chief law enforcement officer, Attorney General Jeff Sessions, has resigned as President Donald Trump's request. Sessions has endured over a year of personal criticisms from Trump over a recusal from the investigation into a potential coordination between Russia and Trump campaign. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says he was surprised by the sudden resignation.
I find the timing very suspect.
Earlier today, the president didn't want to talk about Sessions' potential resignation.
I'd rather answer that at a little bit different time.
A few hours later, it was official. From WRFL, I'm Desiree Cross.
So we'll get to introductions in just a minute, but I want to start with initial reactions to that breaking news. So from either of your perspectives, what does Jeff Sessions' resignation mean for the Trump administration or for the national government at this point?
Well, as we're going to talk about later, the Democrats took over the House of Representatives. They now have authority to conduct investigations, to issue subpoenas for those investigations. Already there was a question of whether if they took the House that they would try to lead an investigation into the Trump administration and its election. This just increases the odds the Democrats will decide they want to do this one.
Yeah, and as Desiree said, this has been a long time coming. It's been no secret that there's been some bad blood between the president and the now former attorney general. For those paying attention, which it sounds like Senator Schumer may not be, this shouldn't come as a surprise.
So we've obviously seen a lot of changes in this administration since President Trump was elected back in 2016. Is it normal for a president to have so many staff changes throughout his first 2 years as commander in chief?
Turnover is common. When presidents put together their cabinets, they're often not putting close allies in those positions the way they do with the executive office of the presidency. And sometimes they don't get along well with those factions or the leaders that they appointed, and you'll see resignations. It's what's really rare is not having resignations. It's the public nature of the sparring between the president and the members of the cabinet with whom he doesn't get along.
On Twitter, especially.
Especially late at night over Twitter. Yes,
right. Well, obviously, that is a huge shift on the federal level. Last night's midterm elections obviously will have an impact on state and local levels, and that may leave Kentucky citizens with some questions about what these changes might look like in their areas. So tonight we will be speaking with a few guests that are experts on campaigns and political affairs to try and answer these questions. WRFL's Angel Logan reports on the outcome of last night's congressional races.
After last night's election, the Republicans kept the majority in the Senate, but the Democrats gained 28 seats as of this moment. 23 seats were required for them to flip and gain the House majority. The Democrats now hold 222 seats, and the GOP holds 199. There are 14 seats they have yet to be announced. The current minority leader, Nancy Pelosi,
Today is more than about Democrats and Republicans. It's about restoring the Constitution's checks and balances.
In Virginia, former CIA agent Abigail Spangberger defeated Dave Brat to give the Democrats their 23rd seat. Democrats also won previous Republican seats in New York, Florida, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Illinois, and Minnesota, among other states. As for the Senate, the Republicans kept control with 51 seats, picking up two. The president called the Senate results a huge success and said he's willing to work with the Democrats in the House majority. With WRFL, I'm Angel Logan.
Well, we've already had a little bit of discussion, but I want to get to our introduction of guests now because we do have two more experts with us today. We have a few of Kentucky's professors that share a strong interest and expertise in campaigns, votings, and elections, really everything across that political spectrum. First, we have Dr. Stephen Voss here with us. Dr. Voss has been teaching at the University of Kentucky since 1998. He graduated with his bachelor's from Louisiana State University and earned multiple degrees, including his PhD in government from Harvard University. His research interests include political mythology and voting behavior. We also have Mr. Travis Taylor, who is a third-year PhD student in political science at Kentucky. He holds a master's degree in political management and a bachelor's degree in political science. His primary interests include American campaigns for state and local offices. Prior to living in Kentucky, Travis was successfully a campaign manager and taught graduate-level courses in political campaign management at New York University. Thank you both so much for being here with us today. Obviously, a lot to talk about with the elections happening just last night. But first, I want to start on the national scale. The Democrats, like we just heard, have taken control of the House. Dr. Voss, what does that mean in terms of big picture for the American public?
Right. Well, we talked about one of the main two things it means, which is the ability of the Democrats to investigate the Trump administration and engage in oversight over the federal bureaucracy. The other main thing it means is that it's going to change budgetary politics and tax policy. The Democrats in the Senate, because of the filibuster, already had a voice in terms of most legislation. But the minority in the Senate doesn't have the same power over budgetary matters. Now that they own a chamber, now that they own a House, the Democratic Party is in a much stronger position to force the Republicans to compromise with them on the shape of spending and on the shape of government policy from here on out.
And you speak about forcing that compromise with the separation between who has control in the House versus who has control in the Senate. Is that going to make it more difficult for President Trump and his administration to get things passed?
Not necessarily. You know, the political science research suggests that divided government, as we call it, when at least one party controls a chamber while the other party either controls the White House or the other chamber, they often can pass legislation at the same rate as you see coming out of a unified government that's all one party. The type of legislation may change. It's less likely to be grand sweeping alterations in the direction of the country, more likely to be sort of omnibus compromises or the like. Probably you're more likely to see deficit spending when you have divided government, because that's how they stitch together the coalition across parties, is they just throw money everywhere. So you see deficits more. But that doesn't mean that Trump on balance will have a harder time passing legislation, no.
During this election cycle, Democrats talked a lot about that blue wave is what they were really hoping for. And to some extent, that did happen last night. When you were watching election results roll in on the national scale across the country, elections from all over, from every state, were there any major surprises that you saw?
I guess the only real surprise for me, Maggie, is the high turnout we still saw among Republican-leaning voters. Usually when you already control everything, the voters on the side that's ahead gets a little complacent, they get a little lazy, and their turnout drops more so than the opposition does. But in lots of places, including here in the 6th Congressional District, turnout in those Republican areas was still astonishingly high.
All of the congressional leaders that voted against Brett Kavanaugh during that whole Supreme Court hearing process lost in their state elections. Could it be possible that the recent Kavanaugh case had a heavy impact on election results this year?
Travis, do you want to start with that one?
Yeah, sure. So not all of them have lost. John Tester in Montana, at least last I saw, was on track to win if it hadn't already been declared. He was one of the Democrats that voted against now Justice Kavanaugh's confirmation. But aside from that, you did see a lot of effects from the Kavanaugh confirmation vote, swinging in both directions. For example, you know, just across our state line over in West Virginia, the Democratic senator there, the only Democratic senator who voted for confirmation, actually won re-election in a state that Trump cleaned up in 2 years ago. And then you saw effects on the other, on one of our other borders, with Mike Braun defeating Joe Donnelly, Senator Joe Donnelly in Indiana, Claire McCaskill losing in Missouri, Heidi Heitkamp losing in South Dakota. You did see a lot of effect, like I said, swinging both ways from that confirmation vote.
At the same time, in many of the Atlantic Coast districts that flipped from the Republicans to the Democrats, you have very different electorates from the places Travis just named. And especially these suburban, often Republican-leaning, educated women who were turned off by the way the Republicans handled the Kavanaugh hearing, they moved as well. So really what we see in both cases, both the shift Republican in some places and the shift Democratic in others, is what they're starting to call the diploma gap, the increasing difference between how people with college educations are engaging with the political system, more democratic than ever, versus how people who don't have the college degree are interacting with the political system.
Do you see that diploma gap widening over the coming years? And what sort of effect do you think that will have in almost the decades to come? I mean, that could be an effect with long-term implications.
Wow, you know, you're unpacking with that the big question mark hanging over the political system, which is, does the way Donald Trump has temporarily remade what it means to be a Democrat and Republican stick, or once he's not the one representing the Republican Party, do these traditional Democratic and Republican electorates snap back to where they used to be? Or as we'd put it in political science, was this a permanent realignment of the party system, or is it just a temporary blip caused by this celebrity president?
Right, and sticking with Donald Trump, do either of you think that this Democratic wave of electorates gaining control of the House, will that have an effect on either his campaign or his election? Mr. Taylor, we can start with you.
I don't think really anything is going to have an effect on the way Donald Trump does business. We've seen that no matter how much pushback he gets, no matter how
controversial.
Yeah, how controversial he is. He sticks with it. And that, I think that's just how he is. And I don't think that this is really going to change that. At the same time, he's a pragmatist. I mean, you saw him reach out to Leader Pelosi last night and say, hey, you know, I'm willing to work with House Democrats to get things done. So I don't think it'll change his rhetoric. It might change how he interacts with the Congress, that interbranch relationship, but I don't think it changes how he does what he does.
If anything, this election probably emboldened Trump. It was an attempt. It was a chance for voters to repudiate him. If there had been a real bloodbath for Republicans in the House and Senate, a real blue wave that wasn't counteracted by continued Republican enthusiasm, then you might have seen Republicans more willing to fight back with him in Congress. You might have seen a serious challenge emerge in the primary, so that to be the nominee in 2020, he'd have to really fight for it. This was pretty mixed results. This was not a blue wave. And this was not a major backlash against Trump. And if anything, that's probably emboldened him.
Yes, as I saw during the returns last night, an analogy made to the 1982 midterm elections. So this was the first midterm election under President Reagan, and then 2 years where we saw very similar results to what we saw last night. And then in 1984, when President Reagan's back on the ballot, he cleans house. He wins, you know, every state save one in his reelection bid. So I think Dr. Voss is right that that it doesn't really change much on the 2020 landscape.
Right. Well, sticking with that national relevancy, the national government did see a flip in the House, but they did not get much help from Kentucky's 6th District Republican incumbent Andy Barr won again over Democratic challenger Amy McGrath. WRFL's Angel Logan has the logistics from last night's election and word from the candidates.
The race was closed for most of the night, but near the end, Barr came out ahead. Congressman Andy Barr ended with 154,468 vote compared to McGrath's 144,730 votes. Barr gave his victory speech last night at his watch party.
6 years ago, we marked the beginning of a journey together. We knew the path would neither be smooth nor straight, but we pledged ourselves to nothing less than the full-scale renewal of the American dream. Tonight, thanks to the people of Central and Eastern Kentucky, that journey continues.
Like we just heard, a big win for Andy Barr last night. Dr. Vosh, you mentioned before we went on air that you've worked a lot with the Barr-McGrath election, specifically with the analysis of that. When you were watching the race last night, were you surprised with how Amy McGrath came out with a huge lead? And then once those rural districts came in, Andy Barr really seemed to catch up pretty quickly. Did that election go how you imagined it going?
You know, it's always a heartbreaker for the people whose candidate jumps out ahead. And the first thing I do after I see some of those early returns is I go peek at which counties and which precincts have been coming in to figure out what it really means. Mm-hmm. And once I looked and saw that over half of Fayette County had come in, and that's why she had posted a 55% vote rate, I knew that that was going to recede a lot. I had a feeling it meant she was going to lose ultimately. I mean, ultimately, her vote share in Fayette County was no different from the Democrat that Rand Paul beat in Fayette County 2 years before. And you need more than that out of Fayette County in order to win. What that means is a lot of the Republican-leaning voters in Lexington still turned out and still supported Andy Barr.
Is that surprising to you that her numbers were similar to maybe a candidate that didn't have the same amount of popularity across the state? Just driving around Lexington, there were Amy McGrath posters seemingly everywhere. It seemed like she was, I mean, that race was neck and neck for the entire election cycle. Were you surprised at all to see that Andy Barr pulled ahead at the end?
I mean, she whipped up a lot of enthusiasm. And I knew, you know, for a long time that we were going to see a pretty heavy Democratic turnout for her. What I didn't know was whether Andy Barr was going to be able to do the same, to match her. And when that started to become clear that he probably would is what Travis was already telling you about, which is after the Kavanaugh hearings. And people who were out in the field were coming back saying that there was a new energy, new enthusiasm, new concern with national politics among Republican voters in the district. That Kavanaugh thing here pretty clearly, I think, helped Andy Barr.
Right. And so obviously Barr is back for another election cycle. What do you think another Barr term will look like for the 6th district?
You know, I don't have a lot of direct exposure to how he runs his congressional office, although a lot of my students go on to work for him. But what I hear from people who interact with it is that how he stayed alive in this potential swing district is partly by focusing on the non-political, non-ideological stuff. You know, when you call the office asking for help or information, it's apparently a crack staff, and Lexingtonians get good help from him that way. And that's traditionally, you know, since before I was born, how members of Congress in swing districts have kept their incumbency advantage going into election after election.
This election was huge for the 6th district, and that was reflected obviously in the campaign ads that seemed to be almost every other commercial going back, McGrath Barr, McGrath Barr. There was that decision discussed between Andy Barr's negative attack ads towards Amy McGrath and her decision to stay positive. Mr. Travis, with your background in campaign management, do you think that was smart for Amy McGrath to choose that positive route, or do you think her loss showcases that you have to go negative to win an election?
Well, I don't think that it showcases that you have to go negative to win an election, but I think that she did run a campaign that I probably wouldn't have. Now, I wasn't in the room when strategy was discussed with Colonel McGrath, so I don't know, you know, what decisions were made, what options were put out there, but it's certainly not the campaign I would have run. I think it focused too much on trying to beef up turnout in the urban area, in Fayette County, in Frankfort, and try and win by increasing turnout in those areas to the detriment of the outlying areas. I think if I had been advising her, I probably would have held off on the fighter pilot veteran line of messaging. In the primary, probably would have run the primary a little bit differently and found a way to win without that, and then saved that to try and swing some of the Republican voters, because there's actually some political science research that shows that Democrats can increase their vote share by running as a veteran. It's a benefit that Republicans don't have because they tend to, Republicans that is, tend to kind of own the national defense issue anyway. And so when you have a Democrat who has this national defense, this national security background, it does tend to benefit them in terms of their vote share. So I would have maybe held off on that and run a different primary campaign and then saved that fighter pilot veteran line of messaging to try and swing some Republican voters in the general.
Just very briefly push back on that in one sense. That ad that went viral of her in her flight jacket in front of the military equipment, it caused millions of dollars to flood into her campaign chest. So while Travis may be right that purely in terms of messaging, it would have been nice for that to come later, she might not have had the money to do the messaging if she hadn't run that ad right off the bat.
Yeah, that's a fair point. The last thing that I'll say about the way she ran the campaign, the primary campaign, some of these sound bites that you heard Andy Barr use that really stuck, painting her, you know, to the left, too liberal
for Kentucky. Right.
Exactly. You know, this I'm further left than anybody in the state of Kentucky. I was in socialized medicine my whole adult life, and it's awesome. These kinds of messages that she used in the primary, probably more behind closed doors than out in the public eye, really came back to haunt her. And her decision to stay positive, I don't think, was as harmful to her as her inability to push back against that line of messaging. She tried in the debate. She said, you know, this is taken out of context, but in the public eye and her mass campaign messaging, she didn't find a way to push back against that. And I think that ended up hurting her, especially in those outer areas.
Right. So we will now turn our eyes to the local level. Unlike McGrath versus Barr, the race for Lexington mayor was not a close one. WRFL reporter Desiree Cross takes a look at how Linda Gordon was able to defeat Ronnie Bastin.
Shouts from Linda Gordon's listening party were heard last night as election results poured in from all over Fayette County. She defeated Ronnie Bastin by more than 20,000 votes to be Lexington's next mayor. With over 16 years of service, being a retired nurse, a formal council member, and the formal vice mayor of Lexington, she says, quote, "I am so excited to move forward with the things that are in my vision, that I've talked about the whole campaign, things that will make Lexington an even better place, and that's what people want." Gordon received a phone call from Bastin just after 7 p.m. to congratulate her on her victory. Bastin said he would do all that he could to support her in her work as mayor. Though he didn't come out on top tonight, he said, "I'm so proud of the race we did run. We worked hard, we put people first, and we kept our values first and foremost." Gordon will be sworn in January. For WRFL, I'm Desiree Cross.
Well, like you just heard, Linda Gordon will be Lexington's new mayor, as she did defeat Ronnie Bastin by more than 20,000 votes. That race was called early in the night, as she jumped ahead from the very beginning. Really never a close race from the get-go. Mr. Travis, how much of an advantage was her prior experience? Obviously, she has worked as vice mayor before. Was that key in the voters' minds?
It certainly could have been. I think there was a lot going on in this race that that we didn't see. You contrasted it with the McGrath and Barr race. I think one of the bigger contrasts that we saw here was the fact that this was a very clean race. You didn't see the nasty attack ads from one side or the other or both sides. And so I think that ability to stay clean really had a kind of a cleansing effect on the electorate.
Right. It really was repeatedly reported that both candidates were very likable. There was not a whole lot of negative information that came out about either of them. Do you think that leads to, this might be a weird way to put it, but happier voters than voters who were so overwhelmed by the negative attack ads during that McGrath-Barr campaign?
Yeah, maybe so. The thing that I think about is that This was more of a down ballot race, and so you see, in election returns year after year after year, election after election, these down ballot races really not getting as much attention, not getting as many voters. And I don't have the Fayette County numbers from the congressional race, but there wasn't a whole lot of roll-off, what we call in political science. There wasn't a whole lot of voters who voted at the congressional level and then just didn't vote at the mayoral level, which is uncommon. So I think that the positive campaign really helped, as you put it, make voters happy and want to actually stick around in the poll, the polling place for a little bit longer to cast those down ballot votes.
Right. And you just mentioned it, but voter turnout was a huge part of every election across the spectrum yesterday, and it was widely reported that there were long lines in many different polling places, not only throughout Kentucky, but throughout the entire country. Here in Lexington, it was no different. WRFL reporter Desiree Cross takes a look at voter turnout.
Yesterday was a huge day for Fayette County. The midterm elections began and voters were at the polls bright and early. One election official on Versailles Road said, quote, "Actually, it's been busier than it's been in the 5 years that I've been working. We've had a line since 10 till 6 this morning." Desiree Cross has more on the election results in Fayette County. Republican Tom Buford defeated Carolyn DuPont by a little more than 13,000 votes for Kentucky State Senate District 22. Steve Kay returned winning his seat as Lexington's vice mayor, and Richard Maloney, a current at-large councilman, and former councilman Chuck Ellinger won second and third place to the council at-large seats.
Well, Dr. Voss, you have research in voting behavior. Were you surprised by the voter turnout? I know we touched on it a little bit earlier, but compared to previous years, what do you think was the difference to get those voters to the polls in Lexington this year?
So sadly, the trend we're seeing in voting, not just in Lexington, but around the country, is an increase not in voting for, but in voting against. People who say that either their message is to be pro or anti-Trump, or they're voting because they don't like the Republicans or don't like the Democrats, this aversive partisanship, rather than a more upbeat, optimistic message. I'm more fond of McGrath's approach, I think, maybe, than my colleague, this upbeat campaign, because I do think that having that mostly positive message and letting other people do the negativity against Barr allowed her to positively motivate people to get out and vote for her. And we probably need a little bit more of that. Really, the only thing that surprised me in her approach was that when it came time for the debate with Andy Barr, where it was very prominent, she kind of dropped the "I'm not going to get into the mud" promise, and "I'm not going to be negative," and she starts using fighting words, liar, lying, that's not usually what people consider positive campaigning.
Right, definitely a change in rhetoric there. Mr. Taylor, your thoughts?
I think Dr. Voss is absolutely right. It's, working in a public place here in Lexington yesterday, and I was overhearing people talking about voting, and there was one gentleman in particular who said that he doesn't vote because he doesn't want to just choose between the lesser of two evils. And that's something that you hear so frequently, is it's the lesser of the two evils. And I think that Dr. Voss is right. And we talked about positive campaigning from a strategic standpoint. But I think from a normative standpoint, having that ability to vote for someone is pretty awesome.
Great. Well, that is all the time we have for tonight. We would like to thank our guests, Dr. Voss and Mr. Travis, for coming out tonight to discuss these important topics. Obviously, the elections will have wide-scale implications across Lexington and the rest of the Commonwealth. Please join us next week. We'll be back at the same time, Wednesday at 5:30. For tonight, thank you for listening to WRFL 88.1 FM. I'm Maggie Davis. Good night.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm, and of course via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.